Log Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
Show number 1,299. Bam! Sunday will be our 1,300th show. And it will be a music show, as you know, because of the Big Bay competition. But either way, right now, welcome, welcome, welcome. As you get ready to sit down and get down for a little bit with the brothers and sisters for another edition of the Stir Fried Soul. See, I can't get it out. Sorry, y'all. My sinus is driving me nuts, but I had to get that out. Soul Tree Radio in the raw. Sound like old hound dog. I'm Mike Lewis, singing DJ Honeycomb, your host, and as always, it is good to be with you. Soul Tree Radio in the raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Brothers, the Assassins of the Black Athletes Sports Network. Get all the good shit. Who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now. At www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, wherever they may be. To my family in Canada, happy Boxing Day. Hope you guys are having a good time. Picking up that last-minute gift for you-know-who. And aside from that, we are just glad that we can breathe because my sinuses are really fucking with me. But so far, so good. So knocking wood and carrying on. Got Radio Reggie down in Virginia, Richmond, that is. We also have our brothers, Frank Robeson and Ricky Hampton Sr. in Oaktown and Detroit, respectively, hosts of the African American Athlete Show. You can hear them Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern. They do a great job. Please lend them your ears and check out their website, theAfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Of course, our brothers in Philly, the Orlando Ledbetter and the Sonic Cheryl Jones. And, of course, the mighty Oba, Pat Freeman, awash in Obaness, as Buffalo Bills are going to make it to the postseason. We'll see how they do, but hopefully we'll hear from Oba, because we really don't know what's going to happen with the Super Bowl rotation as far as the media is concerned. But that's a separate discussion for another time. As of right now, as we wait on the rest of the cats to come in, it's going to be an abbreviated session because we just want to get some things that need to be said out the way. I was elaborating on this briefly in the video I did, but as we speak right now, Detroit Lions are getting their asses waxed by Tampa Bay. 27-0, and it's not even halftime. With me, the editor-in-chief emeritus of the Black Athlete Sports Network at BASNNewsroom.com, Tony McClain. T, what's cooking?
Did the Lions know that it was a 1 o'clock kickoff as opposed to a team kickoff?
No shit. They are playing like they're on drugs, aren't they?
Well, here's the funny thing is, like, apparently they're playing without their interim head coach, but no disrespect. But you know what? They could have brought back the ghost of Joe Schmidt, and they still would be down 27-0 at this point in time right now.
No shit. That's true. Now, this is way beyond the curse of Bobby Lane. I mean, you know, the Jets have won one game this season, but, you know, Detroit lost all 16 one season. And to top it off, they still made more money than two teams in the league that year. Think about that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
just
look,
naked and crazy.
Well, we've talked about this for years about, you know, especially in the NFL, there really is no incentive to win for a lot of teams.
No.
There's a reason why. I mean, the Lions are a perfect example. The Lions have been to one NFC championship game in the last 6,000 years.
Okay.
Give or take 5,000 years or so.
Yeah.
But I digress. Mm-hmm. They have seen two Hall of Fame type players basically walk away in that Danny Glover from Lethal Weapon mode, where I'm too old for this shit, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They wallow in mediocrity. I mean, you know, we always talk about how, you know, the Eagles basically every year try to win the salary cap Super Bowl, But right. The Lions, I don't even think the Lions do that. And see, the Lions, they sign their free agents on and off. You know, they'll draft. You know, they'll occasionally get a decent player, maybe defensively or wide receiver. But the Lions are epitome of what the NFL is all about, in the sense of they do just enough so that the fans don't bitch, but they do so little that the expectation. I mean, when was the last time we even tried to put Detroit Lions and Super Bowl or even championship in the same sentence? Now they've been they've made the playoffs, I think, a couple of times over the year. And yeah, they did get screwed.
Yeah, when Caldwell was the coach. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. Well, and of course, it's like, oh, we're winning consecutively. Well, we can't have that shit here. You got to let him go. So they basically bring in Lou Albano III, and just because he actually stood on the side, because he actually stood next to Bill Belichick for more than 2 weeks, they figured, oh, he's got to be a good coach.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the old Reagan thing. Are you better off than you were 5 years ago? Are you better off now than you were 5 years ago? And would it be a resounding N and O for them again?
Well, think about this. And I want to get Gary in the mix as well. G, can you hear us okay?
Yes, sir. What's up?
Hey,
Gary. Oh, God, I apologize, guys. I was not going to come on, but my head finally drained last night early this morning so I can breathe again. But the Detroit Lions have been part of that reality that we've known for a long time. Five teams in the league do everything they can, or at least they give the impression they do everything they can to find talent. Five teams stay on the bottom end of things, and we know they're just going to get a piece of that TV pie, and everybody else is like in states of flux. But every rotten team, it seemed, except Detroit, has made an effort to step its game up. Like when they had
Michael, forget Jacksonville.
I'm getting to Jacksonville.
But see, Gary, Jacksonville has a little bit of an excuse because they have, Detroit has been around forever,
Forever, yeah. Serious
and,
forward.
And they exactly. I mean, they have innovated the thing. When there were pyramids, they were losing. When there were dinosaurs, they were losing. When the Berlin Wall was open, people said, "Did the Lions win?" Oh hell no, no they didn't.
Guys, I have a friend in Detroit, and this man continues the roof of his team. I don't understand
how he does it. It's So that's the thing. Even if you've been a quote unquote long suffering fan of certain teams, whether it be NBA, NHL, NFL, what have you, what's been the constant? And again, I'm not trying to alienate our Detroit folks that listen to the show, but that's been the constant. It's never been a thing where they've been very, very good or very, very bad. They're always
mediocre.
And that's the worst. And see, in a sense, they're basically Pete Rozelle's dream.
Yeah.
Yes.
Eight and eight every year. They're in it. They do just enough to make you think, well, maybe they're turning the corner, and then when they turn the corner, of course, it winds up being a gorilla with two flashlights. That's how one of that winds up being with them all the time. And the thing about it is, it never gets any. Now, who are they going to now? I'm anxious to see who's the next sucker. I mean, coach that will take over the team. Now, there is. I will say this. Even with all this being said, and I don't mean to be morbid, but I think it needs to be said. The fact that the Ford family is not real. I mean, they still. You know, I guess the wife is still around and everything. But for the most part, the influence of the Fords isn't really there as much. They basically need a Steve Cohen to bring in some hope, if nothing but someone of that same ilk that's going to be like,
I know what you're saying.
Clean this mess up.
Look. The NFL had long prided itself on the fact that no matter how good or how bad their product was, it was always in demand. But they are losing money this year, and not just because of COVID. You know, nobody wants to see this consistently bad shit. I mean, the Chicago Cubs made an art form out of promoting a losing team and making money off of it. But that lovable loser shit don't play but for so long. And everybody knows now because of FanDuel and everybody else who's trying to make a couple bucks, cash must flow. And they don't have time for no bullshit. So the money's going to go where the winning teams go. And having said that, allow me to put in someone's explanation, which is a bit speculative, but there's some meat in that sandwich, to the fact that, as we have predicted the last few years, we've seen the scenarios as to which teams they want in. And this year, we know they want Tampa Bay. They're not even hiding it. And now, since somebody said, ask the question, here's one person's version of the answer.
The NFL may not have the same sort of soiled reputation that the NBA has when it comes to shady behavior from its officials. There hasn't been the same wide-scale controversy like what happened with Tim Donaghy, the former NBA ref who rose to infamy for his role in a gambling scandal. But even so, there are some NFL games and calls that take place with certain teams during certain matchups that look like they simply have to be fixed. And you know what? We might have just witnessed the single most fixed game of the entire 2020 NFL season. Tom Brady, formerly a member of the New England Patriots and of 28-3 fame, led his team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, into a divisional matchup with their NFC South neighbor and old friend in the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta had a tough start to the 2020 season, limping to a 4-9 start to its season largely due to inconsistent play from the team's defense and aging star quarterback Matt Ryan. Tampa Bay, on the other hand, while sputtering, was right in the thick of the playoff race, sitting at 8-5 with much of their postseason destiny still in their hands. That made this game a highly anticipated matchup, largely because of the playoff implications that it had for the Buccaneers. As so many people around the league are curious about how far Brady can go without former head coach Bill Belichick. And based off of how the actual game ended up playing out, I'm starting to think that perhaps some people in the league office had a similar interest in the Buccaneers making it to the postseason in their first season with Tom Brady under center. In fact, there are a couple of pivotal plays that looked so suspect that not only social media, but even the play-by-play guys started to openly wonder if there was a conspiracy unfolding in front of us.
I'm going to say it. I don't want to read into conspiracy theories and such at this time, but
I mean, could be.
Could be a possible conspiracy.
So, I'm not alone in thinking that. It sort of makes sense when you think about it. Having Tom Brady in the postseason, with the Super Bowl scheduled to be played in Tampa Bay this year, it'll be a big-ticket item for the NFL in terms of viewership and revenue. And that's especially important to the NFL in a year where revenue is down because of COVID-19. Having the future Hall of Famer in the mix brings immediate intrigue to the entire deal. But just because it makes sense from a ratings perspective, and because there are some people who are angry at a call in the NFL, which really is nothing new, right? Well, that does not guarantee that the game was fixed, does it? So how about we take a quick look back at what transpired, and you can be the judge. The game got off to a rather dubious start for the Buccaneers, who, like we mentioned, were in fairly desperate need of a victory against this woefully mediocre Falcons side. Atlanta's offense came out firing behind a strong performance from Matt Ryan, who would finish the day with 356 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, and a 110.6 quarterback rating. Not to mention the great performance from the team's defense as a whole, which shut the Buccaneers out in the first half, as the team led 17-0. But in the second half, it looked like Brady started to remember who he was and who the team on the other side of the field was. Brady did his best to essentially recreate his Super Bowl miracle by leading the Buccaneers on 5 consecutive scoring drives, allowing the team to outscore Atlanta 31-10 in the second half of Sunday's matchup, en route to a 31-27 final victory. His head coach, Bruce Arians, gushed over his timely performance, saying, "He's just a winner. He knows how to do it." Buccaneers tight end Cameron Brate echoed a similar sentiment. A lot of it is his track record, the belief he inspires in us all, Brate said. He's done it on the biggest stage, that 28-3 game. We've seen him do it. That being said, Brady's backers conveniently decided to leave out more than a couple of key details as to how this epic comeback came to be. Tampa Bay had done the bulk of the work already, having stormed all the way back from the aforementioned deficit to take a 4-point lead. But the Buccaneers were not out of the woods yet. The team was at a pivotal moment. There was just under 2 minutes left, and the clock was still winding. Tampa Bay's high-powered offense was faced with a 3rd down and 2 yards to go. With a 1st down, the game would be all but cemented, because they could just kneel out the rest of the clock. But if they didn't convert it, they'd be faced with a tough decision between kicking a field goal to make it a 7-point game, or trying to convert on 4th and inches, which would put them at risk of handing the ball back to Atlanta with enough time to try and make a last-ditch effort at stealing the victory. On that 3rd down, Tampa Bay elected to hand the rock off to Leonard Fournette, who went bumbling into the line and was taken down. From the initial shot that the Fox team had, it looked like Fournette was well short of the 1st down marker, which was positioned at the 9-yard line. I mean, when you listen back, Fox's broadcaster Kevin Burkhart could not have sounded any more certain that he didn't reach the 9.
Give it to Fournette, who is not quite going to get there. And so we'll bring up 4th down.
Which meant that Tampa had to either kick or try and convert on 4th down. And this is where it all started to get more than a little bit sketchy. The refs took out the 1st down chains and did the whole thing, walking them out and planting it down. And even from the 1st camera angle, it looked like there was a small but noticeable gap between the nose of the football and the 1st down marker. Then, all of a sudden, the cameras panned away from the officiating crew and zoomed in on Tom Brady and a couple other of the Buccaneers players fist-pumping and high-fiving, celebrating that they had converted the 1st down. After the initial excitement of the moment, you can hear some pause from the booth as they realized what was happening in front of them. Check out this back and forth.
It doesn't look like a first, but I guess it is. I didn't think he got it initially.
Looked like it was a little bit closer to the 10-yard line than they've got it right now.
And the more the booth watched the play unfold, the more that they dug the NFL's hole deeper. Burkhart went as far as to say,
"I honestly have no idea how they could look at that and say he got it, right? I mean, if you're thinking that at home, we are too. He was short, but they decided the game is over."
And it wasn't just Burkhart who felt this way either. Dean Blandino, Fox's NFL rules analysis, told Burkhart live on air,
"Yeah, I'm looking at this, and it certainly looks short. I didn't see any part of that football making the 9, but in looking at this, I do feel he's short."
Yikes. Even if there wasn't a conspiracy underway, it is a bad look for the NFL to have its officials blow such an important call in a pivotal moment like this. Especially with all the technological resources that they now have to get the call right. Either way, the call is upheld and Tampa Bay proceeded to run out the rest of the clock, notching their 9th win and better positioning themselves for the postseason run that they've been dreaming about since inking Brady this offseason. Atlanta, on the other hand, was gutted by the loss. I mean, even the team's social media manager took to the Twitter streets to lament both the call and the loss. And you know what? It's starting to look like Atlanta might have a pretty valid complaint that there was some collusion against them here. Just check out this slow-mo view of what was going on while the refs thought that the cameras were not on them. You can clearly see the official in the midst of all the players take the ball from where Fournette was down by the 10-yard line and slide it up nearly a full yard. This was incredibly sketchy, because even when you watch the play in real time, it's fairly obvious that Fournette was down near the 10-yard line, because as he's being tackled, the ball kind of curls back in towards his body. So it's not even like one of those forward progress types of situations either. And when you take a closer look at the officials who were involved in the decision, the whole ordeal looks even more sketchy. The line judge that comes running onto the field to move the ball, referee number 65, better known as Walt Coleman IV, is a second-generation official whose dad, Walter Coleman III, has actually had a long history with Brady. Coleman III was on the field during the infamous Tuck Rule game, which had a crucial ruling that, you know, kind of favored Brady.
Reviewing the play, the quarterback's arm was going forward. It is an incomplete pass.
Wow. Coleman III was also the head official in the 2003 AFC Championship game between the Pats and the Colts, a game in which the Colts later complained that the refs didn't properly call illegal contact, pass interference, and defensive holding against the Pats DBs. The calls made in that game were so egregious that the NFL ended up changing the way it treated those penalties and implemented a much stricter enforcement policy on them, limiting the amount that defensive backs could make contact with opposing wide receivers. And where it gets really crazy is when you hear Coleman rave about Brady and the way that he greeted him after the last game as an NFL official. Yes, he came out to my last regular season game. I was in New England and he wasn't playing that day. After the last play, Tom came from the bench. Normally, we immediately run off the field, but all the guys on my crew all came out and got around me and were all congratulating me, shaking my hand. So we were still out there longer than normal. And Tom came over there and congratulated me on my career, and we shook hands, and that was really nice. He didn't have to do that. He could have gone on and shook hands with the other team's quarterback like they normally do, but he made a point to do that, and I appreciated that. I mean, sounds like the two were pretty buddy-buddy, if you ask me. Meaning that not only is there the possibility that the NFL was incentivized to slant the game towards the Buccaneers as they want to ensure they qualify for the postseason, but it's also entirely possible that Coleman IV was just independently backing Brady because the QB had such a good relationship with his father. His father, who he was very close with, as he set him on the path towards an exciting career as an NFL official. I mean, he even changed his jersey number when his father retired, from 87 to 65 in his honor. The entire situation stinks to high heaven. I don't know if the NFL was in on the fix or if perhaps it was just Walt Coleman paying a favor to an old friend, but either way, if I were a Falcons player, I would be pissed off that a hard-fought game ended like this.
After review, the ruling on the field stands. First down, Tampa Bay.
But what about you? Do you think the Falcons-Bucks game was fixed? Join us in the comment section below. If you liked this video and learned a thing or two.
Well, I saw the video, and guys, I got to tell you, the ball was at least half a yard short of the marker. I'm talking at least half a yard. So we're talking longer than the length of the ball. And you saw the ball being moved by the same official they're talking about. So it was
Michael,
that coupled with the history of the other official. That, of course, leads us to the conclusion the fix is in. Go ahead, Jake.
Michael, okay. And when the Raiders played during the Patriots, they had the Tuck Rule, right?
Right.
Question.
It should be the Tuck Rule.
How many times they call the Tuck Rule?
Yeah. That's a good question, Jake. I think it was at least three times. That was it. Once?
One time. That's it. The Oakland Raiders have won that game because that rule, the New England Patriots, changed the history of the National Football League.
No.
They won the Raiders. They won Al Davis. All the Raiders to go back to the Super Bowl again, which was going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. Tony, how many times since the Tuck Rule game, not that season, but since that game, have you heard the Tuck Rule invoked?
I was thinking of that as you were just before you asked, and to be quite honest, maybe once.
Once.
Maybe once. Mm-hmm. I would literally have to look it up. But see, this is one of the reasons why I, we have all these dynasties over in the football. You know, the Packers of the 60s, the Dolphins of the 70s. I guess you could say the Niners of the 80s, the Cowboys of the 90s. Steelers of the 70s as well. I have never respected anything and everything that has come out of Foxborough, and this was even before they quote unquote became a dynasty, because they always, you know, there's a very egregious commercial that's out now for I think it's Samuel Adams beer, and the whole and it's basically on the premise of your cousin from Boston, and it basically plays into the whole, you know, the loud, obnoxious, can't speak regular English talking folks from Boston and everything, you know, the arrogance and everything like that. You know, a few years ago, after I guess like the Red Sox, Bruins, and the Team TiVo won the Super Bowl, they were declared the sports, you know, the sports capital of the world, in a sense.
Yes.
Now, put it this way. It's no doubt that they are trying their damnedest to get them in the playoffs. And, oh, by the way, while that was running, they scored again, so it's now 35-0. You know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're, you know, put it this way. If they were looking for big ratings for their Super Saturday, put it this way. I'm actually watching Kentucky Louisville right now. I didn't realize the first game wasn't on until 1 o'clock, and then I turned over, and I saw that it was already 13-0, and basically, like I said, I the Lions must have got that, you know, the Lions, I think, are basically on West Coast time, because they did not show up until.
You ain't shit. They just put Brady's stats up for the first half, 22 of 27, 340 yards, and 4 TDs.
Yeah.
What do you expect from a team that uses powder blue and silver as their team colors? Well, that really strikes fear in my heart.
Well, see, even more so today, they're wearing they're wearing the silver mostly today, instead of the. First of all, I've never seen a blue and silver lion. If I ever did, I'd probably run. But that's a whole other story in and of itself. Not that I would stand around for the orange and black lion either. But you know, I digress. So let's put it this way: the NFL can fix this all they want, but I don't even think they can even fix it for Tampa this year. I really don't. I'm reminded of that old Richard Pryor joke when he talks about Jake LaMotta fighting Sugar Ray Leonard. Said, you know, how are you gonna be the guy when you got, you know, 60,000 white people propping him up? Put it this way, this is gonna have to be Steven Spielberg, M. Night Shyamalan, August Wilson, maybe some other great director. I mean, this is going to have to be like some epic ass shit for them to get them to a Super Bowl.
I think what was so damning about that video or that audio was the fact that they named the officials. And how the officials, I mean, we knew about the Donaghy stuff. We knew that everything was pointing to him, and how they tried to make him a one-man crime cartel. Referees like Jeff Triplett, I think his first name is, but
he had
a reputation with certain teams. So we see the backlash.
Plus the man doesn't know the difference between heads or tails, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, fuck yeah. And then, of course, how the money is getting involved in this, when everybody saw the Rams-Saints game, and that awful fucking call, what did all the betting houses do? They stopped the action. They gave everybody a ride on that. That never happens. Never. Mm-hmm.
But then they got them in the back door because, you know,
right.
because the Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl wound up being, what was it, 13-3?
So, something like 13-3, yes.
Basically, they gave the FanDuel treatment. We guarantee you $1 million to win if you bet on the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And again, it wind up. It goes back to what you've always, you know, the house always wins. Or as Oscar Madison said, there's no such thing as a sure thing.
Yeah.
That's why they call it gambling. But again,
that's right.
And see, we will probably see even more, you know, shenanigans. Now, let's face it, they're not going to have to do much today. I mean, they could. They could probably play the second half with a running clock, and the Lions still probably you know don't blow this lead. But see, there's a price because see, if when Houston won their World Series a few years back, the gambling gods have basically. I mean, it's not so much the gambling gods, but the quote unquote gods of sport have basically. Sort of shit on them since then.
Yeah.
When you look at the favor of the Rockets, when you look at the favor of the Texans, and even to a certain extent, when you look favor to the Astros, even though they got within a game of the World Series this year, karma has a you know what's the thing you always like to say you know karma may never
karma
be on
late
time,
sometimes but she always
but it's never,
keeps
it's
an appointment.
They've never missed an appointment. And see, Brady has got a career full of things. And I don't, you know, let's put it this way. Again, and I don't think I'm being Pollyanna with this. They're going to do some, you know, they're going to be shenanigans. But they are going to, I mean, it's going to, see, it's going to be blatant if Tampa Bay gets to the Super Bowl this year. Because there's gonna have to be, there's literally gonna have to be a shenanigan every week. Because remember, they're probably going to, you know, the Saints clinched the South yesterday.
Yep.
There's literally going to have to be a freaking mini series of shenanigans for them to even get to an NFC Championship game.
if Tom Brady gets to the championship game. They're gonna need both the Magic Dragon to go be on the field too.
They're gonna have to bring back every dead actor from MGM, Warner Brothers, for this to play out. It's literally going to have to be, literally, you know, I mean, this is beyond the Jedi mind trick.
Oh, that old saying about sunlight being the best disinfectant, they have to show that if you're going to do this, you better play it straight because the credibility issue was the thing that they did not talk about when they put the action back after that free ride.
And all you have to do is look at the last two Monday night games where the real game was in the last 10-15 seconds.
But you know, we can make the argument that the Cleveland-Baltimore game, all right, somebody might have made a mistake because of the situation running out and, you know, you're just grasping at straws to try to make a play. What was done by Pittsburgh and Cincinnati was out and out criminal.
More so Cincinnati because again Pittsburgh, you know, they didn't show up till about 10:30 for an 8:15 kickoff.
But yes, I mean, think about it. Okay, 24-17, and never mind even the team. Just think about the scenario. It's 24-17. the team in the lead has the ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wrap.
Yeah, the over. Yep, the over is already squared away. The line is already convinced. Because, oh, by the way, the line, because the line was what? What it was 11 and a half, 11, I think it was 11, 10 and a half, or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. So it was done by many stretches of the imagination. You couldn't do more to it than that in order for the game to fall legit. All you had to do was sit on the ball. That's it. 16 seconds, and it's fourth down. What are you going to do? Unless you're really, really awful, there's no way somebody is going to score with 16 seconds left. There's no miracle, Music City miracle, or nothing like that.
And even if you throw in the whole rivalry sort of thing, you know, other than this other night, when was the last significant time the Bengals beat the Steelers in a game that counted? This is a rivalry strictly out of division, not out of attrition, because they have basically spanked the Bengals for quite a while, even in the postseason. Now one could say this was payback for the Carson Palmer thing and the Burfoot Pac-Man Jones losing their friggin' mind in the last 15 seconds. Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out how Joey Porter never got fined during that whole thing of having a coach on the field. But again, that's another 2-hour show in and of itself.
But what in the name of Vontez Burfict would possess these motherfuckers to kick the field goal and eliminate? Now, you know, when they talk about the phone communications from the press box or the bench to the quarterback, I mean, can you see a scenario where someone's saying straight up, if you kick the field goal, we win? This is no different than a thoroughbred race where the owners and the trainers and the grooms and the jockeys even bet on the horse, because they know
you have to look. We cannot be naive now to not think that either broadcasters, coaches, players, or what have you, because they've become blatant with it now in regards to the whole gambling aspect of it, to the whole fantasy league aspect of it. We would be incredibly naive if we tried to, you know, look the other way in regards to that. But again, it would only take a blatant action if the league were to, because see, again, that whole, you know, uphold the shield. I think a lot of people, when they listen to Roger Goodell talk, they have at least two shovels on standby.
No joke.
Because of the bullshit that they're going to be fed. But again, this is one of the reasons why, you know, and see, this just shows you how sort of naive the NFL is, because in their mind's eyes, oh, the ratings are lower? Okay, let's put more games on.
Right.
This is
the fourth season, guys.
Do you remember the Eagles Giants game?
Which one? You're talking about the Miracle of the Man?
The one where Carson Wentz passed to Boston Scott with 40 seconds to go in the game.
Touchdown pass to win the game. Yeah, I remember that.
Now, if you look at the point spread, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Giants lost the game by half a point.
Yep.
And if you're a better, you're sweating bullets because it's going 21-16.
Yep.
And the Eagles score a touchdown, so you lose your money. See, that is crazy.
It's routine. The sad thing is it's become routine now.
Yeah. But you know the gambling bug will get you if you don't watch out. And yeah. That's the bottom. That's the other side of the price that you're paying here. I mean, for somebody to think they're sitting, and that's why what Jay Williams said was so significant. This is a guy who was a former pro athlete. He got money. You know, unless he's a nut job with gambling, he's not going to spend it all up. But he said straight up, I lost a lot of money. Now, I don't know in his mind what a lot of money is. You know, to him, it could be a whole different number than it would be to me. But that he would say that meant he bet that. And he wasn't by himself. There were thousands of other players who were also betting that money. And it caused a huge swing point-wise. And, you know, they mentioned Tom Brady in that audio. Now, remember that Super Bowl, it was 28-3. The over-under was 56. So to start it, they had to come back to get it to 28-28. And didn't they do that? They
yes,
did all
in regulation. In regulation.
In regulation, yes. So in overtime, they don't win the game with a field goal. They win it with a touchdown. So you know that took all the money out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Tony. Yeah.
No. I was just agreeing with you because that's, you know, with just the way the game is played now, it's a turn off. I mean, we have to watch in the sense because of our work of work, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So we have to at least check it. We have to watch it enough so we can know what we're talking about here when we're doing our thing. But it's very, very bothersome because I think even if you're just a lay fan, it's starting to become a thing now of like, really?
Yeah. Can you believe that this is legit? Again, wrestling fans know. They know what the deal is. If Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair are meeting in a steel cage match, they already know. We know somebody's going to win, but they don't even care because the whole dance for them in the ring is the show. Whether they're jumping on top of tables or slamming the shit out of each other and cutting each other open to make them bleed, you know, the wrestling fans don't care. That's what they want, you know, because they pay for the right to do that.
And the sad thing is it's more entertainment than sport in some instances.
Exactly.
But like we said, we know that in regard to wrestling. We already get that. But see, now it's supposedly these quote unquote legitimate sports.
That's right. There's no pretense with wrestling, but with sports, entertainment and football, you know something's rotten in the cotton. You didn't get to see the video, but if you see the video of that game, the referee literally moved the ball. I mean, he went down with his hand and moved that motherfucker. I'm like, holy shit. So we're trying
it's
to imply.
It's tough to beat 8. You know, it's tough to beat 18 versus 11. I tell you that much. I don't need to be a math major to know that.
It's making me wonder. The last Super Bowl. Not that I'm trying to say it was fixed, but how well did General Mahomes have to execute to not just beat the 49ers, but the referees too? You know, the 3rd and 15 play, that deep pass to Hill, it wasn't supposed to happen. If I remember right, Patrick Mahomes took 11 steps before he reared back and threw.
Yep.
I think he's still roaring back. If I'm correctly.
I'm telling you, you know, when you're throwing a deep pattern, they always talk about 3, 5, and 7 step drops, but they never talk about the planting, the setting yourself, and throwing. And again, you're doing this under duress. So literally, Mahomes takes 11 steps back, not just to prepare for the throw, but the plant so he can get as much on it as he can as he lets it go. Now, he's got a strong arm. But really, that ball sailed a good 55, 60 yards downfield before he'll make the catch. And I'm like, holy shit. And they were like,
and he caught him on the fly.
Shit.
And they caught him on the fly, too.
Yeah, he caught it on the fly. So the refs were like, well, shit, we can't do nothing with that. So the fact that the video evidence allowed General Mahomes to go forth makes you realize now there ain't going to be no close calls. Shit's going to get called the way it is. They can have the camera look at the ball from any angle there is, but the referees say something else, they're fucked. And trying to get Tom Brady in this Super Bowl is going to be the detriment of any shred of credibility that the NFL ever had.
Well, see, they still see does Brady have fans outside of New England? Yes. But to the point where they want to see him in the Super Bowl again? No.
Mm-hmm.
No. No. No.
Well, you guys remember the catch in Dallas? In the playoff game in Dallas?
The Des Bryant catch. That wasn't a catch.
I'm sorry, guys. That was a catch.
Oh, that was a catch. Mike Renfro caught the ball. What's our boy from Tampa? Bert Emanuel caught the ball. I mean,
I mean, the NFL is getting ready to bury itself. If Tom Brady wins one playoff game, but if he goes to Super Bowl, I Gary Gray is done with the NFL.
I always have the Three Stooges and the Godfather trilogies on standby on Super Bowl Sundays. I've been doing it for years. Matter of fact, I might switch up this year and maybe do Batman. I'm not sure, but one way, you know, depending on the matchup. Because see, let's put it this way, they're going to get in, you know, because if they win today, they're in. But see, how long they're going to be able to carry this nag, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Because more than likely, they're going to have to go on the road for, is it extra round this year? So they're basically going to have to win almost three games just to get
to the
damn Super Bowl. So, and again, we've seen it happen. But legitimately, we've seen teams, you know, win. Raiders did it a few years back. We saw the Giants do it a few years back, whatever. So historically, it can happen. I don't doubt that. But this is all three Butt Sisters when we're talking about in they're gonna play this way. They're gonna have to come up with a fourth and a fifth sister at this point in time right now for him to get to the Super Bowl.
Well, see, this is where greed has taken over. Because it was bad enough. They were pushing everything they could push to get the contract renewed. And when I say renewed, I just mean to that when they realized they had to do the season, they redoubled their efforts, especially after hockey moved on the path. They got in there. The next mission was to get to the Week 10 so that all the contracts would be guaranteed. They did that. Now, as they're finishing up, they've had football on every day of the week. And I think it's the first time in the history of national football.
Matter of fact, as I'm listening to the radio version, going back home from my sister's house yesterday, This is the first time in NFL history where there's been a game played in every – there's been a game played at some point every day of the week this year.
So they didn't hesitate in their intentions to make sure that they were going to make good on that $10 billion gambit. And now that they have, now they're thinking that they're not craving little cowards, but they're greedy craving little cowards. And they're going to make perfect scenario for them. Tom Brady, Tampa Bay, and General Mahomes. Not because it would be the best matchup, because it's not, but because it's the one they think will make the most money.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, that's the sad part, because, see, they're not putting the fans' input into this at all. I think it will come back to haunt them at some point.
They don't care because there are payrolls
to be met.
It diminishes the greatness, the potential greatness of General Patrick Mahomes. This kid has been playing his ass off since he got in the fucking league.
Gentlemen, I want you all to watch the way they treat Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson anywhere near the Super Bowl.
I'm glad you said that, G, because the field generals, the cream is definitely coming to the top. Lamar Jackson slumped a bit in the middle of the season.
He's on fire now. Three games
in a row. They are throwing the ball, thank God, because he knows in the playoffs they're going to get on his ass if he doesn't throw the ball. But they're still not even in the playoffs yet. They're 9-5, and Miami is blocking them from getting in. So kudos to Brian Flores for coming in there and doing an amazing job with the Dolphins. They haven't talked enough about him. But General Jackson must get to the postseason, and he must play well. So now you got Jackson, Mahomes, General Wilson, of course, in Seattle. This is the scenario that we said was going to happen from the beginning. The NFL's black chocolate cream is rising to the top.
And don't forget, you basically have got Hurts. And I guess Haskins, if we can keep him out of the gentleman's club within the next couple of weeks, somebody's got to win the NFC least. So
the generals will affect everything because Washington plays Carolina, and if General Bridgewater can come up with a solid game, they can beat Washington, and that would leave a three-way dance between Dallas, Washington. So if Philly beats Dallas Sunday, then the last week, just like last year, will be a setup, Philadelphia and Washington, for the division title with 6 fucking wins. Unbelievable.
The powers that be wanted to be the Dallas Cowboys. That was whatever they want.
Well, that would make for this story. Look what happened with Dak Prescott and how courageous the Cowboys are. Get the fuck out of here. You know, they're a bunch of, and as they say in Italy, in the neighborhood of Bay Ridge, they're a bunch of fucking hoods. Because that's exactly what they are. They're playing off this guy. They're pimping him out for every dollar they can get. They can give a fuck about Dak Prescott. They may give him a contract, but Jerry Jones still has a problem with the fact that I think he's gone. And just like I said, the Jets and Jacksonville will probably flip a coin for Lawrence, and Jerry Jones will offer the moon. He will say, throw everybody in this motherfucker. What was that, Ricky? When Ricky Williams, the Saints gave up their whole draft for Ricky?
Yeah.
I don't know if Dallas will go that far, but I'm sure Dallas will mortgage their future to get that white boy. At least three number one picks would be the starting price. It's like that sounds like that movie Draft Day.
All right, Jim. I got to go. My little one be in the airport. I had to get out of here.
All right. Well, are you doing the COVID 4 o'clock?
No, sir.
All right. Well, handle your business then, youngin. Sunday, the Big Bank tournament will continue. We got action going on in the Timeless region. 9 p.m. Eastern. They will carry on. Are you going to do music tomorrow?
I think he's already gone.
Oh, damn. He said he had to go. He was in a hurry. Oh, yeah, he gone. Unfortunately, yeah. We have to turn back to who left this mortal coil. Where are you at in regards to that?
In regards to... I'm sorry. Let me get that question again.
In regards to who left this year. You know, the deaths in 2020.
After tonight, we will be halfway through the year. We're going to get June done later on this evening. And then, unfortunately, we had to add one more after yesterday. You know, rest in peace, Casey Jones, who passed away yesterday.
No.
He passed away yesterday on Christmas. The former Boston Celtic Hall of Famer and head coach. So we've got to add more. What we're basically going to do is we took a day off, so the final one will be, you know, just so, you know, we did it in a case we were going to possibly lose someone in December. So the final one will be on the 1st, which is this coming Friday. But we're going to be basically, by tomorrow, we'll be halfway through the year. And again, it's just been very, very sobering sort of looking back at, you know, who we've lost this year. And, you know, I think especially with this happening during the holidays, I think it just lets you know that, you know, just how much more, you know, I think, you know, my best gift yesterday was the fact that I was able to get together with my fine family yesterday and just be able to just sort of sit back and relax. By the way, we watched this Netflix movie that's based on the life of Ma Rainey with Chad Boseman. You gotta see it.
That was a Broadway play. Yeah,
it's
very good.
Tremendous. You have to see it. I'm not one to whatever, but I would highly recommend it if you're able to sit down and watch it this weekend. You're doing yourself a favor. A lot of great performances with Viola Davis. Of course, you know, Chad Boseman's final film. But I didn't realize that Denzel Washington is one of the producers of this movie as well. So if you get a chance over the long weekend, go check it out.
Denzel has been quietly taking all of August Wilson's work.
Yes.
And redoing a lot of it. He's put a lot into it, but now he is definitely a patron of the arts, and he's a smart cookie. Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing Maureen. Other than that, my brother, we're going to cut it short here. I'm actually on assignment because I'm working on an article about Major League Baseball and this Negro League bullshit.
It's
going to be MLB KMA because nobody's talking about the real reason, which is the money, of course. And
It's crazy. All right, sir. I will be in touch over the weekend. You have a good one.
All right, Ben.
Take care.
Take care. And for everybody else out there, again, Sunday, the Big Bank tournament will continue. The action in the Timeless region. We will have a double dose, and we will give you a repeat of who will be in the region that we're talking about. Remember, in the Timeless region, we have Aretha Franklin, Dame Shirley Bassey, Eddie James, Gladys Knight, Dinah Washington, Donna Summer, Nina Simone, Roberta Flack, Gloria Lynn, Timmy Euro, Nancy Wilson, Grace Jones, Millie Jackson, Bessie Smith, Barbara Streisand, and Jennifer Hudson. Now, Aretha already appeared with Jennifer, so we got two more matchups coming up. There will likely be Shirley Bassey and Barbara Streisand, and Bessie Smith, Miss Etta James, Queen of the Blues. We'll see what happens. Everybody else, please enjoy the rest of the weekend. Please go safe. Y'all know how we do here. Go safe, stay safe, be safe. I'm leaving with a little Hugh Masekela. Talk to you later.
From Namibia and Malawi, there's a train that comes from Zambia and Zimbabwe, there's a train that comes from Angola and Mozambique, from Lesotho, from Botswana, from Swaziland, from all the hinterlands of southern and central Africa. This train carries young and old African men who are conscripted to come and work on contract in the gold and mineral mines of Johannesburg and its surrounding metropoli. 16 hours or more a day for almost no pay. Deep, deep, deep down in the belly of the earth, when they are digging and drilling for that shiny, mighty, evasive stone, or when they dish that mishmash mush food into their iron plates with the iron shovel, or when they sit in their stinky, funky, filthy, flea-ridden barracks and hostels, they think about the loved ones they may never see again because they might already have been forcibly removed from where they last left them, or wantonly murdered in the dead of night by roving and marauding gangs of no particular origin. We are told to think about their lands and their herds that were taken away from them with the gun and the bomb and the tear gas and the Gatling and the cannon. And when they hear that choo-choo train, a chucking and a pumping and a smoking and a pushing and a pumping, crying and a steaming and a chicken and a they always cuss and they curse the coal train. The coal train that brought them to Johannesburg. Woo, woo!
See you tomorrow evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of Sultry Rave on the Raw, the Big Bag Competition. In timeless region, two shows, two great matchups, some wonderful singing. Everybody, please be careful out there. COVID's no joke. Take care of yourself. We will talk to you and see you tomorrow. Later.